Now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, 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 yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be, and we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care, to Nahastan aniva nijone go shabothya, nijone go shabothya. Hey, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo.
Akwe, greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Hey!
Music from the Creed drum Blackstone off their Canyon Records CD back in the day. The name of that song was Enjoying a Way of Life. Ashkwe, greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. In the studio today are two special guests, Mr. Sean Sellers and Mr. Mark Rodriguez. Sean and Mark are spokespersons for the National Student and Youth Organization, Student Farmworker Alliance, SFA. Many listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio are familiar with SFA's important social economic justice work in support of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers from several previous Wolf Mountain Radio broadcasts on farmworker justice. SFA has been a major force in helping to build a nationwide movement against agribusiness sub-poverty wages and oppressive working conditions, both in the field and processing plants. I am proud to be a member of SFA. I am honored to call Sean and Mark friends of mine. I invited Sean and Mark back to Wolf Mountain Radio in order to inform listeners not only about the important topic of labor justice, but also to talk about the upcoming second annual SFA Encuentro that will occur next month in Immokalee. Last year, I attended SFA's first national gathering, where Wolf Mountain Radio produced a 14-part radio series from that historic event. This 2006 season, I have been privileged to be a member of the Encuentro Planning Committee. Sean, Mark, and I are very excited about SFA's upcoming gathering. Wolf Mountain Radio looks forward to interviewing more youth activists who also care about social, economic, and environmental justice. Student Farmworker Alliance is a national network of students and youth organizing in solidarity with farm workers to eliminate sweatshop conditions and modern-day slavery in the fields. SFA support of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers is done through education and information events, direct action campaigns, and organizing college campuses groups for social justice. As most listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, agriculture and farm worker justice is an important concern to us here at Yad Kiddushi Native Center. I, like many Native Americans of my generation, grew up harvesting crops. I've experienced the back-breaking work of raking blueberries, picking fruit, potatoes, and working cranberry bogs for long hours for very low pay. I've seen the brutality of crew bosses abuse farm workers. I know the deplorable conditions people still work under in the fields and in packing plants. America's harvest comes at a high price for many low-wage workers struggling to care for their families. I, like other farm workers, have been exposed to toxic agrochemical fertilizers, herbicides, and insecticides. These poisons cause serious health problems as well as contaminate the environment. These are some of the important issues which I and Student Farmworker Alliance are very much concerned about. The Student Farmworker Alliance works in partnership with the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. CIW is a membership organization of mostly Latino, Haitian, and Mayan Indian low-wage migrant workers based in Southwest Florida, centered in the rural farming town of Immokalee. Immokalee is one of the battlegrounds for poor people's social and economic justice. The oppression and exploitation faced by this area's farm workers over the years has been nothing less than modern-day slavery. Yad Kiddushi Native Center is proud to have been an ally and supporter of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers from their early beginnings until now. Many listeners and people across the country have heard of CIW's long campaign against multinational food giant Yum Brands, the parent company of Taco Bell restaurants. While that battle has seemed to be won, the struggle for economic justice continues. CIW, with SFA and other supporters in the Alliance for Fair Food, are fighting other food monsters, most notably McDonald's. The case of McDonald's and other serious issues, such as ending economic exploitation and providing fair wages, respect for farm workers' rights and well-being by agribusiness, the need for safe and healthy working conditions, the need of affordable, safe, clean, healthy living conditions, the need of education and health care for farm workers and their families, and ending poverty and discrimination is the concern of CIW and SFA, and is why Sean Sellers and Mark Rodriguez are here today on Wolf Mountain Radio. Welcome to the program. Please let us start off with a brief background about yourselves.
Thank you very much for this opportunity, Ernest. My name is Sean Sellers, as you said, and I'm from Plano, Texas, which is a suburb north of Dallas. That's where I grew up. And I went to school at the University of Texas in Austin, and that's where I first learned about the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, and at the time, what was their boycott against Taco Bell. So being as we had a Taco Bell restaurant on our campus at school, I got involved with the effort there to try and kick that Taco Bell off campus. And although we were never actually successful with that goal, we were successful in raising a lot of consciousness and creating a lot of education around the links between companies like Taco Bell and the conditions that farm workers face in this country, the farm workers who pick, in this case, tomatoes. So after I graduated school, I spent about another year in Austin just working and being involved with the grassroots community there, and then I moved to Immokalee, Florida, and that was in the summer of 2004.
Just like to say thanks, Ones, for the opportunity. As you said before, my name is Mark Rodriguez. I was born and raised in Yonkers, New York, which is a city just north of the Bronx. I went to college at the City University of New York, Queens College to be exact. And while I was there, I did a lot of organizing against the war that was going on through September 11th. And we did a lot of organizing against tuition increases and budget cuts to the university. And it was around that time when I first heard about the CIW and their struggle, particularly with the Taco Bell boycott. So around that time, I started looking into the CIW and raising awareness about it with people I knew. And then I was fortunate enough to come down to Immokalee last summer for about 3 months as an intern for the Student Farm Worker Alliance. And now I'm actually just moved down to Immokalee on a bit more permanent basis, and I'm going to be one of the national co-coordinators for the SFA.
Many listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio throughout the world often hear our program focusing on what in English is called anti-globalization, on corporate industrial economic free trade zone issues such as CAFTA, NAFTA, and these are all very important social, economic, and environmental justice issues. But I always want our worldwide listeners to always be reminded that there's always human consequences to our terminology and to our subject matter. Most listeners know that I myself, as a Native American, grew up as a farm worker, not so much as a migrant, but as many listeners know that up until about 15 years ago, the majority of blueberries in America, the majority of cranberries in America, as well as raspberries, were hand-harvested by mostly North American Indians, as we're called. And so the issue of farm worker justice is by no means, to me, just an academic one, and is by no means just another, quote-unquote, social justice issue to be concerned about, although that in itself is very important. But I want really people to hear now from my two guests today who work daily in support of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers some of the realities of what it's like for farm workers to try to survive in what is really still a very racist country. We are in Immokalee, Florida, Southwest Florida, and this is the year 2006, and some people might not really remember or realize that we're also talking about an area that is part of the Deep South, that historically is Dixieland. And I can tell you, as an American Indian person, I see racism quite a bit in this so-called land of the free. And Immokalee, as a town, being primarily a rural agricultural farm-working community, is still one of the most racist parts of America that I've ever been around. And if you spend any time in Immokalee, as my two guests here do and as I do, it's quite a different reality for people who come from what's now called Central and South America and the Caribbean. The so-called Collier County Sheriff's Department is just one example, is not only racist, but very arrogant and very abusive. And I really would like for you, Sean, and for you, Mark, to talk a little bit, please, about what it's like for people who have had to really leave their homelands in what's now called Central and South America, Guatemala, Mexico, Honduras, El Salvador, the Caribbean, really no fault of their own because of historical American imperialism, American colonialism that, as listeners to this program know, some 20 years ago, the war that the U.S. waged in what's now called Latin America is largely responsible for many of the reasons why people like from Mexico and Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, have had to leave their homelands and come up north here to try to survive. So would you talk about the daily reality of living in poverty and living in a very racist part of the United States?
It's a lot to try and describe and a lot to talk about. I mean, the truth is that we could spend an entire program just talking about the conditions people face working in Immokalee, people's living conditions, the nature of police brutality in the community. I think you made an excellent point that the poverty doesn't just begin in Immokalee, but really it's a poverty, it's a deep, desperate poverty for many people that they face in their home countries, in Mexico, Latin America, other parts of Central America. And that is very directly connected to U.S. intervention. It's very directly connected to free trade agreements. So people don't come to the United States in search of, quote-unquote, the American dream. It's more about trying to survive. And if you have no economic opportunities at home, then that means, and you hear about this place called the United States where there are economic opportunities, you're going to try and find those opportunities. So really the story of Immokalee begins much before Immokalee. Many people face an extremely difficult and dangerous journey to even get to Immokalee in the first place. Since NAFTA went into effect in 1994, it's estimated that upwards of 3,000 people have died in the Sonoran Desert trying to enter this country, which I think it's pretty fair to call that a form of low-intensity warfare that people are experiencing on the border. And of course, that situation's only continuing to deteriorate amidst all the rhetoric we hear from the Republican Party and other places about the need to, quote, crack down on immigration. Now you have people like President Bush pledging to send National Guard troops to the border and so on and so forth. But nonetheless, many people do survive. Many people find their way to Immokalee. And as I've come to understand it, as I've heard about it, people come to Immokalee simply because it's a place that's has a very strong reputation as having a constant need for work. And so this is another one of the factors that actually pulls people into the country, is that there exist in this country, in the United States, there exist millions of low-wage, dead-end jobs where you don't have any sort of stable workforce because the jobs are so poor that as soon as you can find another job in another industry, you go. And so it creates a constant turnover. So you have communities like Immokalee that exist in this turnover and basically exist as sort of a vacuum that suck in other desperately poor people that need this work. I mean, that all might sound kind of academic, but I think it is important to understand that we're not just talking about poverty in isolation, but we're talking about really deep and systemic poverty in many, many places, violence in many, many places. And Immokalee is in many ways sort of an intersection of these different levels of oppression. Life in Immokalee for a farm worker is difficult. The work is very, very heavy. I know that from seeing my friends and comrades tired when they come in from work, and I also know that because I've had the opportunity to harvest watermelons for the past two summers, so I've been able to get some of the experience for myself as to how heavy farm work is. It's very hard work. Florida's extremely hot. That's, you know, one of the reasons why the growing season is so long here and why agriculture is such an important industry. It's very warm. A typical day in the life of someone who picks tomatoes might look something like this. You wake up at 4:30, 4:45 to prepare your breakfast, prepare your lunch for the day. And by 5 or so, you are out, 5 or 5:30, you are out in this main parking lot in the center of Immokalee, in the heart of the farmworker community there, and you're looking for work. And so one of the things that really characterizes work in the agricultural industry, and one reason it's so different from other low-wage jobs, is that you have to be available to work every day as a farm worker. It's not like if you work at, say, Walmart, where, yeah, you're making really poor wages, but you also have a schedule, and you also possibly have the opportunity of getting a second job. I mean, that sucks that people have to work multiple jobs to support themselves, but you don't even have that option as a farm worker because you have to be available to work every day. And there's no guarantee you'll get work every day. So you go out to this parking lot and you basically try and hook up with a crew leader who The crew leaders work for the growers, and they are, you know, they're subcontractors. They're contractors, basically, that assemble crews of workers and then take them out to the fields. And so that might be 20 minutes from Immokalee. It might be 30 minutes from Immokalee. It might be two and a half hours from Immokalee. And remember, none of this time you're getting paid for. The way payment works in the tomato industry and in large parts of the agricultural industry is on a piece rate system. Going back to the Walmart example, you make a low wage, but you're getting paid by the hour. So you at least have some guarantee that if you work, say, 40 hours a week, you will make X amount of dollars. In agriculture, those, you're getting paid by the piece. And what that means in tomatoes, for example, is that you're getting paid by the bucket. So for every 32-pound bucket of tomatoes that you fill up, you're getting paid about 40 to 45 cents. So you do the math. That means if you want to make 50 bucks in a day, you have to pick about 125 buckets of these tomatoes, which is the equivalent of about 2 tons of tomatoes that you pick and that you haul. So say you get out to the fields at seven or eight, then you have to wait even longer for the dew to dry off the plants. You can't pick tomatoes while they still have dew on them. It causes problems. They ended up breaking, and you just can't do it that way. So you might not even be able to actually start working until 10 in the morning, even though you've been up since 4:30. And so all of that time, like I said, is unpaid because you don't actually start making money until you fill up those buckets. So then basically you haul ass and you pick as many buckets as you can. You try and just absolutely crank it, you know, and get as much done as you can in that amount of time that you have. Then, you know, 6 o'clock comes around, 5 o'clock comes around, the day starts to wrap up, and then you head back to Immokalee. When you return to Immokalee, you're tired, you've been up all morning, all day, you're exhausted, you've been out under the sun, it's been 90, 95 degrees, and you're doing hard, heavy work all day. So then you return to the trailer that you probably live in. These trailers in Immokalee, it's one of the things that's just totally obscene about the town, is these trailers can run as much as $1,000, $1,200, $1,500 for a completely run-down, dilapidated trailer that really is not up to code. It's not up to code in a legal sense, much less in any moral sense of people shouldn't have to live in conditions like that. Given that these trailers are so terribly expensive, the situation lends itself to terrible overcrowding because people simply have, that's a reality that you have to adjust yourself to be able to afford to live anywhere. No one can afford that rent on their own, so you hook up with other people who in many cases are complete strangers. It's not like it's your extended family or it's your friends. I mean, there might be some of that, but probably not the entire trailer. And you live together, and so you have situations where you have 10, 12 people sharing a trailer who are all getting home from work at the same time, who are all going to work at the same time, who all need to use the shower at the same time, who all need to use the kitchen at the same time. So what that means in reality is that your entire life honestly centers around the work. You're either working, preparing to go to work, or cleaning up after going to work, or cooking after you worked or before you go to work. And so the essence, your essence in Immokalee as a farm worker, as a tomato picker, revolves around the work. So that in of itself, I think, is really a form of violence where people are completely reduced to really the status of machines in the fields. The reality is that these are actually people. So there's many other aspects to life in Immokalee, but I think those are some of the important.
America, somewhere near the edge of America. Well, sister is a battered woman, battered by a battered man. Somewhere near the edge of America, who's got less today than yesterday. Don't even want to think about tomorrow.
From Anishinaabe singer-songwriter Annie Humphrey, the name of that song, Edge of America, about living in poverty in America, is the title track off her Mac O'Shea Music CD, Edge of America. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yad Kadishi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. In the studio today are two special guests, Mr. Sean Sellers and Mr. Mark Rodriguez. They are spokespersons for the National Student and Youth Organization, Student Farm Worker Alliance. SFA is an activist nationwide network of people concerned for social and economic justice, especially in relation to agribusiness and labor struggles. SFA works to support the rights and well-being of low-wage workers, primarily in the food and agricultural industry. They are based here in Southwest Florida, partnering with the Coalition of Immokalee Workers and Alliance for Fair Food. I've had the honor of being friends with Sean and Mark for some time, since Yad Kadishi Native Center has been a longtime supporter of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers as well. Next month, the SFA will be hosting their second annual nationwide gathering, the 2006 Encuentro in Immokalee. Their first Encuentro, last August 2005, was a very special and historic gathering. I was very privileged to participate last year. Many of us are excited about this upcoming 2006 meeting. One of the subjects I'm sure will be discussed is the topic of environmental health issues for farm workers and their families. This is the subject of my next question, which I will ask Mark to comment on. Environmental health issues are a primary concern of mine as a biologist and community activist. Many farm workers suffer serious poor health from exposure to agricultural chemicals. Fertilizers, herbicides, insecticides, and fungicides are toxic to the environment and people. Not only are they often applied to crops incorrectly or without regard to so-called EPA regulations, many farm workers are not even given advance warning of spraying. Field workers are not provided with so-called protective gear. There is minimal or no environmental oversight and monitoring of these highly lethal chemicals, which can also contaminate the land and water of the community. Many listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know that I studied environmental monitoring and impact assessment science in university. I've worked as a field biologist in projects researching ecological impacts of chemical use in farm and forest industries. Environmental health impacts, such as mutagenic and teratogenic effects, are seen in animals, plants, fish, and even humans. Since the poetic warnings of biologist and writer Rachel Carson many decades ago. Working as a field biologist here in Florida, I myself have often had my boots and clothes soaked from ag chemicals while walking environmental transects in citrus and vegetable lands. I'm sure there have been farm workers who have become sick and perhaps have died from having been exposed to pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, or fertilizers. What about the children born from women who have worked sprayed farm fields? I have heard of a court case here in Southwest Florida based upon ag chemical exposure. Agricultural chemicals often seep into the soil, eventually contaminating precious aquifer water. Agricultural chemicals are also contaminants found in water runoff, polluting creeks, streams, lakes, and aquatic ecosystems. Those of us who eat fish, for example, which many people in the Markley area do, are at high risk for environmental health problems as a result of agricultural chemicals in the environment. Mark, would you please comment on this serious issue of environmental health?
I actually think you summed it up pretty well on this. And just before I talk about that issue, to contextualize it a little bit, what we're talking about here and what the coalition talks about is really a condition of sweatshops in the fields. And, you know, this includes the low wage, the sub-poverty wages, the exposure to pesticides, the abuses, and all of that. And what's happening in Immokalee is happening in California, in New York City, in many, many places around the United States. And it's something that probably most people in the United States only associate with, you know, so-called foreign, quote-unquote, backwards countries. But this is something that's happening right here in our own backyard. And, you know, this is how we have a glass of orange juice in the morning, and this is how we have, you know, a tomato to put on our sandwich for lunch. And these things come from these types of conditions. Yeah, you're right. There's been this case in the past couple of years of known as the Immokalee 3, which was three pregnant women who had no other choice but to work while pregnant, and being exposed to the pesticides in the fields, either had miscarriages or gave birth to quote-unquote deformed or birth defect children. And like you said, workers throughout the course of the day will become sticky and have their hands and their clothes stained with pesticide residue. So there's no question that people are being exposed to unhealthy levels of these toxic chemicals. Related to this issue and why this is going on and why you just mentioned the laws are being relaxed by the EPA, I think we need to understand the power and what an entrenched interest the growers are. And the growers is a word that we've been throwing around a lot here. So just to clarify for our listeners, if you imagine a triangle, basically the power analysis of the industry, you have the workers on the bottom, crew leaders above them, growers above them, and then finally on top, the final purchasers, such as McDonald's and Taco Bell. Think back 200 years, we all know who were the growers and the crew leaders, quote-unquote, and who were the workers. You know, obviously, like you said, we're talking about the Deep South region in many ways still affected by the legacy of slavery. Having said that, we need to understand what an entrenched and powerful interest the growers are. And that's why they could do things like pressure the legislatures to relax the laws on pesticides. And for many, many, many years, the coalition struggle was based in Immokalee directly confronting these growers to improve wages and conditions. You know, the coalition did a lot of things that a lot of people out there familiar with the labor movement would be familiar with, such as, you know, a couple of general strikes, each of them involving thousands of workers, and basically shut down the center of the town. They had a 30-day hunger strike by six of their members, you know, work stoppages, things like that. And these were successful to some extent. You know, they stopped overt violence in the field. They even got one grower to increase wages a little bit. But what the coalition started to realize is that dealing grower by grower was not a sustainable and systematic way to change the industry and clean up things like pesticides, abuses in the fields. So that's why they started to, you know, bypass the grower and go straight to the final purchaser of the product, who, through their purchasing power, through buying so many millions of tons of tomatoes yearly, have a lot of power to actually make changes in the industry, to demand from the growers that tomatoes are picked in fair and humane conditions. And that includes the elimination of pesticides and human exposure to these toxic chemicals that are poisoning people daily.
I thought that was a really excellent answer, and just had one small point to add to it, which is, in my view, in no way is it accidental that these same corporations that have such a short-term focus on profit and on production, on the one hand, are treating human beings as if they're machines, as if they should be out there doing as much work as possible quietly without complaining. And that behavior exists on the one hand, and then on the other hand, they're assaulting those same workers, as well as the earth, with a barrage of chemicals and pesticides, because it really is all locked up in a mentality of looking at short-term, quarterly profits, in a view where really the only value that counts is money. Money becomes a value. And things like human life, things like ecological health, all become sort of quote-unquote collateral damage of this... Right, this cost of doing business is business as usual, and I think the logic is the same on these issues.
¿Quién coño me ha robado el mes de abril?
Donde no hay consuelo ni ascensor, el desamparo y la humedad comparten colchón. Y cuando por la calle pasa la vida como un huracán, el hombre de traje gris saca un sucio calendario del bolsillo y grita: me ha robado. ¿Cómo pudo sucederme a mí? Venga, pero lo guardaba en el cajón donde guardo el corazón. El marido de mi madre en el último tren se largó con una peluquera 20 años menor. Y cuando exhiben esas prisas de Instamatic en París, derrotada en el sillón, se marchita viendo Falcon 3, mi vieja, y piensa: guardaba en el cajón donde guardo el corazón. ¿Alguien sabe que me ha robado?
donde guardo el corazón. Absurdo como un verdadero soleario, vacío como la isla sin camarón, oscuro con túnel sin tren expreso, negro como los ángeles de Machín. Como la carta de amor de un preso, así estoy yo, así estoy yo sin ti. Perdido como un pato en el manzanares, oscuro como un túnel sin tren expreso, ángeles de Machín, febril como la carta de amor de un preso, así estoy yo, así estoy yo sin ti. Perdido como un quinto en día de permiso, como un santo sin paraíso, como el ojo del maniquí, huraño como un Gandhi con lámparas, como un barco sin horizonte, así estoy yo sin ti. Mucho más triste que por él. Macabro como el vientre de los misiles, como un pájaro en un desfile, así estoy yo sin ti. Mucho más triste que un torero.
Listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Kitichi Native Center. Yat Kitichi Native Center defends Mother Earth and the cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Yat Kitichi Native Center is an intertribal culture and arts, environmental protection, social justice, and news media organization. Yat Kitichi Native Center portrays Native peoples and their worldviews in a more accurate and in-depth depiction of both our ancestral and contemporary cultures. Yat Kedichi Native Center serves to educate by providing a deeper understanding of our diverse cultures, arts, values, histories, and contemporary situations. Yat Kedichi tries to honor traditional ways by instilling an appreciation and respect for Mother Earth and tribal peoples throughout the world. Yat Kedichi Native Center educates the public on important issues facing indigenous communities. We work in support of intertribal, cultural, environmental, and social justice issues by networking with other organizations and events which share our concerns. Yat Kedichi Native Center serves as a focal point for Native news and information. We maintain a documentary library for networking with the Native and international press. Yat Kedichi Native Center's Speakers Bureau provides spokespersons for school programs, conference speakers, and community presentations. Yat Kedichi Native Center is experienced in planning, promoting Native forums, symposiums, powwows, and cultural events. Yat Kedichi's Mishkwinataki Environment Program protects Mother Earth through conservation and restoration projects. Yat Kedichi's Environmental Education Program focuses on curriculum development, teacher training, and nature field trips. We are members of the professional organization, the North American Association of Environmental Education. Yat Kedichi's Kinonwatakusin Native Arts creates quality handcrafted traditional and contemporary fine arts. Please request our catalog of custom flutes, pottery, beaded necklaces, bracelets, earrings, leather pouches, hat bands, and chokers with bone. Yat Kedichi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio Program, Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, honors Native American and Indigenous peoples throughout the world by being a voice for our ancestors, contemporary, and future generations. Please write us for our catalog of audio tapes available for purchase. Native peoples throughout the world are concerned for the well-being of sacred Mother Earth, tribal sovereignty, and respect for cultural lifeways. If you appreciate hearing Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, we ask you, our listeners, to help financially support our program to stay on the air. Wolf Mountain Radio is an all-volunteer production. Any financial contribution to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices will be greatly appreciated. We thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Please feel free to contact us about our consulting services, or if you or your organization is interested in hosting a speaker or educational forum. To contact Yat Kedichi Native Center, write to Yat Kedichi Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, Florida, 34120, USA. Yat Kedichi Native Center sincerely thanks you. Aho, Kinawatakusin, to all of our relations.
Prior to our Yat Kedichi Native Center program identification, we featured a song from Joaquin Sabina off the 2004 CIW Volume 1 CD, Music from the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. That was indeed a very special benefit concert, I well remember. In today's program, I've been talking with Sean Sellers and Mark Rodriguez, spokespersons for the Student Farm Worker Alliance. Sean and Mark are here visiting with me today as we continue preparing for next month's SFA in Quantico. I want to again thank them for sharing their insights into our conversation on social, economic, environmental justice issues in support of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers' struggle for human rights. Listeners who wish to learn more about the topics we've been talking about, please visit the websites of CIW, SFA, and the Alliance for Fair Food. CIW's website is www.ciw-online.org. Student and Farm Worker Alliance's website, www.sfallince.org. And Alliance for Fair Food is www.allianceforfairfood.org. Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. We shall conclude today's program with music from Lakota woman Sissy Goodhouse off her Makoshe Music CD entitled The Third Circle. The name of her song is Seventh Generation. Thank you for listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, Kinawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Money I do this.